Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourselves up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right. Today, we got more motivation coming, but before we get to that, today, our jump-off topic is Gas City, Community Education, and 20 Cars Per Minute. Gas City, Community Education, and 20 Cars Per Minute. This all is giving us some momentum, dropping clues on our direction for 2022, so we'll be back after Faith Street.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
All right. Our jump-off topic for today is Gas City Community Education in 20 Cars Per Minute. And in our scrolling marquee, we've got some pictures that you might want to take a look at. Let's start off with Gas City. Now, this is all leading to momentum that we want to build for 2023. So let's start off with Gas City. Gas City is a town in the state of Indiana, and it's in Indiana. Its population is 6,157 people. Let's get the history here. Gas City, and that's Gas City, Indiana, was first known as Harrisburg, Indiana, when it was settled May 25th, 1867, by Noah Harris. It became something of a boom town when natural gas was found in the area in 1887. The Gas City Land Company was founded on March 21st, 1892, in a town. And the town of about 150 people changed its name to Gas City a few days later. However, in 2022, much of the natural gas in that area was depleted. The Gas City High School, take note of that, the Gas City High School are listed in the National Registry of Historic Places. Gas City annually host the Ducktail Run Rod and Custom Car Show in the fall. And now there's more information on it. But Gas City, Indiana, was one of many towns that were formed in the United States based on industry. All right. Let's see. Now, the next thing we want to cover in today's title is, community education. And the person I got to go back. I got to find my suit. I'm on my phone here. Okay. Keeping in tune with today's topic. Oh, Okay. All right, here we go. All right, Gas City. So we talked about Gas City, Indiana. That was a town that was built around the industry of natural gas. You know, and it had 150 people to start out. Actually, it started out with one. And then it worked its way up over time to 150 people. And now it's over 6,000. So the next term in our title today is community education. So exactly what is community education? Community education provides outreach and encourages people to pursue education outside the traditional school. The focus of the efforts are on children and adults and specific communities. That's a very important term within this definition. The goal is to encourage community development, community education. All right. Gas City at one time, Gas City, Indiana, had its own educational system, which educated children and people and adults, you know, any of age, on specifics on how that town was supposed to work. Because once again, this town was it was built around the industry of natural gas. Let's see. Now why did I bring up community education? Because community education is typically taught by community educators. So the next person we're going to go to, and we're going to go to the phone line soon, but his name is, and I might be butchering his name, but so forgive me, Genichi Kawakami. Kenichi Kawakami, one of the hats that he wore was that he was a community teacher. Now, he had a specialized type of community education that he participated in, which was community music education. However, he's known for something. Let me get his name. More than that, which our Western people here will be more familiar with. Now, give me a moment here. I'm bringing up his information so I can, and I'm getting all my information from Wikipedia. Okay. Okay, wait a minute. Oh, okay, this is not where. All right, wait a minute. I have to get it another way here. Give me a moment, people. Okay. I'm almost here. All right. Genichi Kawakami. All right. Born January 30th, 1912, sunset May 25th, 2002. All right. Genichi Kawakami was the president of the Yamaha Corporation. We've all heard of Yamaha. He was born in Hamakita, Japan, and was a graduate of the Takachiho College of Commerce. He started working for Yamaha in 1937, where his father, obviously it's a family business, Kachi had been president since 1927. Okay. Wait a minute. That's not the right one. That's not the one I want. Wait a minute. Okay. You know what? I made a mistake, folks. Junichi Kawakami, who was a part of the family business of Yamaha. He was a community music educator, and Yamaha does make a string of instruments. But the founder is Tora Kusu Yamaha. Tora Kusu Yamaha. That's the founder of Yamaha. And Yamaha, they make musical instruments, motorcycles, and other things as well. And generation by generation, it went, you know, they became prolific manufacturers. The last part of the title of today's podcast, 20 cars per minute or 1,190 cars per hour. And this goes to the Toyota family. And then we're going to go to these inventors or innovators. That's a better term. Inventors or innovators, they're probably more like innovators more than anything else. At least that's where I said you guys can chime in on it if you want to. But Toyota currently manufactures or assembles 20 cars per minute. And let's say the average Toyota car and or truck may have about 30,000 parts. And that allows them to put together 1,194 cars and or trucks or vehicles overall per hour. Now, where I'm going with this is, and I'm tying this all in with community education and all this kind of stuff, because it all ties into, in Gas City, Indiana, because there's Gas City, Indiana is a company town. In various parts of Asia, China, Vietnam, Japan, and even here in the United States, you still have company towns, but I feel the time right now is ripe to form new company towns or found new company towns where, like, for instance, tiny houses. A month ago, we had on, I guess it's about a month, 3 to 4 weeks ago, we had on three young ladies that they're developing Freedom Georgia. Right now, they're officially called the Freedom Georgia Initiative. And they just started off with two or three friends that ran across the land, had a vision, and then they got 19 friends together. Now, that's what they're doing. You have towns, and we play Vic, I'm not going to play it today, but we played audio on here of Factory City, which is a documentary. You can watch it free on Amazon, YouTube, where they make coffee pots by the thousands per day, waffle irons, irons, you name it. So and you don't have to invent anything new. Just set up or be a part of a community that makes things, then sells things to other cities, maybe on an individual level, or the Amish do it, the Mennonite do it. There are probably at least 500 Amish settlements, at least, if not more, in the United States And a lot of those communities, they like Yoder, Kansas. Yoder, Kansas has about 165 people. But those entrepreneurs there in Yoder, which are Amish, and probably some Mennonite, they make things and they sell them. So the same thing could be done if Toyota can put together 20 cars per minute out of 30,000 parts per car or vehicle, could be a truck or a car, then a tiny house doesn't have nowhere near 30,000 parts. We're talking about a basic bread and butter house, tiny house that might be, let's say, no more than 399 square feet. Doesn't have 30,000 parts. So that's the goal we're looking at for 2023. And we'll keep you posted. But we're going to be studying inventors. Is there any inventors you want featured on here? Just let us know. Inventors and innovators. Because you really don't have to invent anything. You just have to. I mean, Henry Ford did not invent the car. He just, with his innovation of the assembly line, and he didn't even invent the concept of the assembly line. Anyway, all right, that's enough of my rant on all that. Let me get back to my studio. And the phone number is 619-768-2945. And press 1 if you want to comments, trending topics, solutions, holiday cheer, for just the season, if you're into that type of thing. So, I'm just waiting for my phone to do what it does so I can get back to the studio here. And I spend my days working on figuring out what do I need to do to produce 20 tiny houses per minute. I know I can sell them. Okay. But I want to get into the production aspect of it. 309 area code. Your mic is open. 309 area code. Now that's, I believe, Chris.
Sorry, I'm trying to get to my mute button, brother. Good morning.
No problem. Good, how good this morning. Oh, what do you have for us today?
Well, the love of proof of concept always is a good thing, and I think that's what you're kind of bringing to the table, and also, the proof of who the community can actually be is also something that was being brought to the table. But, this assembly line, Randy,
right,
our friend up there in Tennessee, he's a perfect example of how to do something and watch how it grows. And he's a little over 300 homes right now since April, putting 70 people to work in one community.
And he started off with just himself.
Right?
Yeah, just one person.
Just one house. That's all it started. And that's all it takes to grow. But now since April, there's over 300. I don't know what your community is going through, how big the problem is, or if you even have one. But know that you can help and solve other problems in other cities by just giving up an hour or two. To me, that's amazing. So maybe even a full-time job. But, just coming out and volunteering, showing that your time matters, someone's life is going to matter. This is a good thing. To me, that's a reward.
Right. He does, what, about 3 to 5 hours a day now, right?
Yep. Yeah, he does 4 to 5. They do 4 at least.
Hey, 4 to 5.
So,
okay.
Yeah, it's 4 to 5 now. And that's going to continue to grow. You know, we're gonna get another 70 people working, another full shift. And, you know, what does that do to the economy? If 70 people are making money, what are they doing with their money? They're spending it. That means your local economy grows. So that's what we're about here, right? That's what, you know, Henry Ford and Assembly Line and all this stuff wound up happening, because people come together and work together in unity on an assembly line in order. You know, it can restore order. And to me,
right,
you know, we need this.
Well, I agree. Now the homes that he's doing are, I guess, primarily made from wood. Overall, am I correct?
No. It's been changed over to steel framing.
Oh, okay.
So they do use wood siding and stuff like that. I mean, you know, the products are out there, you know. But the thing is they can build it totally green as well. So it's totally up to the consumer on what they want. But the steel frame is there.
Now, they do, I guess their operation is basically custom. They do custom orders mostly, I guess.
Yes, yeah. It's someone placing an order for a house. Correct.
Now, I've noticed in some of the videos, I watch maybe his videos maybe once a week or so, because I've noticed quite a few people who place the order. But they pick, you know, they could live far away. They could, like, because he's in Tennessee. So, I mean, I've seen people from Oregon, Texas. They've come to pick up their order. Now, is it most of the people doing that, or do they also ship? Because shipping could add on to it.
It does add on to it. It is, you know, set up right now as a pickup. But if it needs to be delivered, we can figure that out. That's just working with our trucking companies, setting up the logistics and getting it done. So there's an extra cost to delivery, but definitely it can be delivered.
Okay. All right. And then you have some manufacturers out there, they're in one location, but and they ship. But they tell people that up front, they give them, you know, estimate and all that. You know, how much, you know, that would cost. But I like the pickup system, because actually the pickup system is less expensive to even purchase it, the way I look at it. What's your opinion on that?
I mean, if you pick it up, you know, what you have in it is your time and your gas. If we have to pay someone to do it, we have their fuel, their truck, their insurance, their labor. So it all is going to cost more. So it's definitely cheaper to pick it up yourself. But if you're wanting something, you know, and you can't do that, then, you know, there is a need that needs to be met. We can meet it. That's what I would say.
Right. Well, he's got a good thing going there, and I'm looking at what he's doing, as well as other tiny house manufacturers and yourself. You guys are like, right now I'm looking at it, looks like it's going through a pioneer phase, the beginning. I know we got a few manufacturers down here. Oh, and they're usually, the ones I know about are typically mom and pop operations. Randy's got a little bit, it's probably more advanced than the typical, you know, small-time operation, so to speak. But Chris, what's your take on that? As far as is it in a, you think it's still in a pioneer phase?
Well,
tiny house manufacturing.
It's definitely in the pioneering phase. For one, it's not in every city. So it's in total growth stage. And this is where every community can come together and just, you know, either create jobs, which I want you to create jobs. That's what it's about. It's about having a life, being able to have anything you want. But, you know, what I want is I want people's needs met. Because I feel like if we get their needs met, then I'm going to get what I want. Because my needs will be met. Right?
Right.
So it comes full circle to that. You know, so I try to, you know, let people understand that this is about total growth of the community, not one person. Because if you want to set it up as a business, set it up as a business, but let everybody that's working there own that business. Be part of it. Own the problem. If there's a problem, claim it. And if you don't claim it, then we know that you're part of the problem. And that's sad to say, but that's just truth. That's just facts the way it is. You know, I've been doing this for 17 years. I don't know very many people that would take one-third of their life and give it away. But I didn't feel a better need because I know that there's a solution. It makes sense. It's factual. It's been proven. So if it's real and it's there, why not embrace it? So I claim the solution. And so far, a million people hadn't been able to tell me a reason not to do it.
Right.
But they definitely haven't done what they said they would do either. But I'm still here 17 years later doing the same thing. And that's the part where let's do it. It's time. And that's what he claimed. He claimed it in April, and he took off. But since April, you know, I got an update last week. It was at 290 houses, but four or five a day, and we've already had 3 days. So I'm putting in at 310, 315 right now.
Now, with the finance, well, I guess most of his purchases are what? People paying cash, or basically, how does the financing work, if any, with his operation?
You know, there is lending. There's lending. So if someone needs financing, we can help figure that out. If there's also programs out there through HUD, we'll let you build affordable housing and utilize that lending, so you don't have to pay the high interest rate. That legislation was passed about 4 years ago. But people don't know this. You know, they don't know that if they're on Section 8 and they feel like they can't go anywhere, they can actually be a homeowner because that legislation's been passed. They don't talk about it because they're not trying to pick you up. But know that those opportunities are there. I'm hearing that back feed on that. On that other channel.
That might be my phone. A little ding.
Yeah, it's like an echo.
I don't hear an echo here. You know what? Let me mute my mic and you talk, and then I'll open back up when you're done.
Okay. But I'm still hearing the echo, or I'm still hearing the other show.
Oh, I don't know what that is, man. Because I muted my mic, you still heard it. I don't hear anything on. The only thing in my background would be here. Cars on the by. We got another call here at 6.
It is me.
Oh.
I got the podcast.
Okay.
On.
Oh, okay. That's what you did. All right.
Yeah,
626. Hold on, Chris. 626 area code. Your mic is open.
You mean 262?
Oh, you know what? Man.
It's okay.
Right.
It's okay. Grand Rising. Okay. Okay.
Grand
How
Rising.
Are you?
Fine.
Thank you, thank you. So I consider you and I innovators because we came up with the concept of tiny mobile solar cabins with a garden, or with garden accessibility, and teaching farming. We here in Chicago, we have Chicagoland Farmers Initiative. I'm also an innovator because of the Spanish mobile school. So I'm actually out in the community teaching Spanish as I vend my products. So I'm excited about that. So we do have the fundraiser. This is Bavani. He said hi.
Hello.
Bavani's 1 year old. Yes, yeah, my grandson. Okay, we heard you. All right. So now we and he's bilingual as well. He's his mother's Latina.
Okay.
Afro descendant.
You're in Chicago right now, or Wisconsin?
Yeah, I'm in Chicago. That is a Wisconsin area code. It just so happened to be there.
Okay. We've got Chris Collins on the phone. He's in Bloomington, Illinois, and he's a manufacturer. So, Reba and I do. I've known Reba for almost as many years as I've been doing this podcast. So, Chris, explain what you do to Reba as far as manufacturing, particularly give the example of some youth, young kids that you had no experience and you helped them put together a house.
Hi, yeah. Actually, we make manufacturing material to build housing. That's any size house. The thing is these machines make 2 feet of material per second. The material don't burn, don't absorb water, stronger, termite-free, mold-resistant, seismic, recyclable, build it without a dumpster, build it cheaper than wood, and get a 60% discount on insurance versus a wooden home. It exceeds all residential codes in the IRC, that's the International Residential Code Book. It is a commercial product, so it's better, but they don't use it in residential, and they need to because it makes a superior home. And these machines don't complain. They don't show up late to work, and all they want to do is make material. Now, this by it making the material, it's not putting it together. That's where it takes our hands. And we put it together, and we can change someone's life. Now, our kids, that is the main thing in my concern, is their future. Because if you take away our children, we have no future. So we need to give them every opportunity to realize that what they are capable of, they're just amazing. Everyone is, but you know, people just don't realize that. They feel, depressed. They feel this, that, the other. No, people don't need to feel that. They need to feel joy. They don't need to stress about getting thrown out of a home. So I want a program for our kids, prison program, doesn't matter. It's time to get it right. And I showed a 13-year-old and a 16-year-old brothers from another city that didn't have a problem. They came to a city that has a problem, had one for 100 years. And in 2.5 hours, never touching the material before, they never touched the saw, it's what they saw. They were able to build something that would change someone's life. To me, that's amazing. That's what that light, people are in the dark. They need their dimmer switch turned on. They can't necessarily just flip a switch and they be bright, but we can certainly start turning it on. And when it gets turned all the way up, then it will be brilliant. But people need to realize how brilliant you are because we're creators every second of the day. We don't talk about it. We don't think about it. So I want our children to have an opportunity that I never had. and know that they don't have to try to leave this planet, we can start to repair the problems that have been created by us. And so that's what hope is about. It's humans on planet Earth housing our people everywhere. Housing our people everywhere is the name of the charity. But humans on planet Earth is who you are. We're human beings, but we're not being human. You know, take those two words, just human beings, being human. They have two different meanings. So,
now, Chris,
that's
Reba. All right, Chris, Reba is like one of my primary boots on the ground partners up there in the Chicagoland area. She's got a pretty extensive network up that way. And I know when we did a clubhouse room earlier this year, it was over 100 people in the room. So what I like to do is, because she's got the network of people and she's boots on the ground up that way. Put it this way, if we had 100, I'll load enough. The numbers that Randy Jones is doing in Tennessee can be replicated because she's got that kind of a network. We just need to create the inventory that would you know, move it really on a daily basis. She's got that kind of network. So we probably need to brainstorm how to bring that into fruition. Because like I said, she's got a pretty strong network on the ground. Although I know it's getting to be wintertime, so we'll probably need a facility up that way to build. So I'm just putting
okay.
that out.
Okay, I've got one of those air up domes that was an arena football setup.
Mm-hmm.
That all I need is a parking lot, and we can set this thing up, and we can work inside building the houses, and when we bring them out, people can live in them. You drive a semi truck right in at the door.
All right.
Pretty exciting. I recall Chris being on the call, one of my last times being on the call.
Okay.
It's pretty exciting. We do have an event at the Grand Ballroom, and they have two parking lots. That's going to be February 3rd, 2023, at the Grand Ballroom in Chicago. So it's a fundraiser, it's an educational conference, and So if you are available, you can save the date, even if you can't be there physically. So this is an official invite. I will actually get your contact and give you some more details about this educational conference. We'll have entertainment as well. I sing with the live band and things like that. So we're going to give the children an opportunity for self-expression and have the parents help them to raise funds. So the first half will be the conference. The second half will be the party. Entertainment.
And,
so, Chris, nice to talk with you again.
Awesome. Yeah.
All right. Now, this event, so we got about 2 months for that. We can get the details of the logistics offline because that gives us enough time to plan for that event. Reba, anything else in that you want to put out there?
Well, one of our great leaders here in Chicago, Mary Sherrod, made her transition on yesterday. So she is actually one of my mentors in the Chicago public school system. So she, Dr. Carmen Palmer, but Mary Sherrod was a caterer as well, seamstress. You know, she made prom dresses and things like that. So she would have been the one to cater our event. Her daughter is an entrepreneur as well, so she will be there. We're going to honor her and a few others. We certainly want you guys to, if you can't be there physically on February 3rd, 2023, at the Grand Ball. The event is for the Black Youth Metropolis and Inner City Youth, IC by me. That's the acronym, Inner City Youth, Black Youth Metropolis Enterprise. And so we're catering to the needs of inner city youth. The disadvantaged communities in order to prevent violence.
Okay. Will you do a live stream from that event?
Yes, that's the idea. We have a gentleman who actually works for Yamaha. He's an IT tech professional. It's interesting that you were just speaking about Yamaha. So he actually, I met him at a venue called Visions on 119th and Loomis here in Chicago. And he does lighting effects. They do like the wall units, the screens that go up against the wall, things like that. And so he wants to help with that part. So
you have vendors at this event too, right? You have vendors at this event.
Certainly, that's a part of raising funds. Vendors will be there. We're looking for sponsors. We do have a few. We have Lawrence Movers. And we have one of our presenting sponsors is Quick Signs. Tony Blair is also running for 7th Ward Alderman. So Quick Signs, Tony Blair, he mentors not only my son but other youth in the community. They had a before and after school program, but we're looking for vendors and sponsors. So we can send information to RebaTheTeacher@gmail.com, RebaTheTeacher@gmail.com, and we can address your concerns. My website, you can also post comments or questions at RebaTheTeacher.org. So if you Google Reba the Teacher, the main website will pop up, and that's RebaLaMaestra.com. So it's Reba the Teacher in Spanish. So a lot of times people are like, well, how do you spell that? So, but Reba the Teacher, it'll pull everything up. And we are also looking for young talent to perform in the first half or the opening of the event. So we're going to have an open mic for the young people to perform.
Okay. All right. I like the live stream aspect of it. And that's, we got a month and a little bit over a month and a half to prepare for that event then.
Yes.
Okay. About a month and a half. Maybe a tad bit over that. So,
yeah.
So we need to start planning on that now. Will you be doing any clubhouse rooms to promote it?
Certainly we'll get back on the clubhouse because I still know a lot of people who are not familiar with clubhouse, and these are some seniors in my network that aren't familiar with it. I think I'm considered an elder now. That's what my uncle said. I'm 52.
What is the definition of an elder? I don't know what a definition of elder is. I guess it's all relative. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I would think so. Honestly, a friend of mine said that elders, it's not about a certain age. You know, that was just his opinion. But,
I guess it involves the people. I guess it revolves around the people. Like, you're an elder to your grandson.
Yeah.
But that's your grandson. So it's all relative to what?
Well, Well, my friend referred to it the Bible, speaking of elders that are leaders, and they've established a certain rapport with the community as wiser. So.
All right, I'm looking at the definition here. It says elder of greater age. That's all of greater age. A person of a greater age than someone specified. Skilled children are no less fascinated than their elders. So that could be a teacher, mom, dad, aunt and uncle, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I had a deal with a guy. His niece and nephew were older than him. So although he was their uncle,
he's their elder.
Chronologically speaking, they were his elder. So it all depends on the context and the people involved.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to come back every day if you want, Reba, so we need to promote that. And then now, Chris, with the building, how many square feet is it, you know, would the dome be so we can build in?
I'm trying to remember the exact size of it. It is, I'm wanting to say it's got at least 100, I think it's 100 feet wide. And
no, that's big. Yeah, that's big.
It's a big building. No, it's a big building. Mm-hmm. It's really big, actually. But it's in Chicago already. And I don't know if you know this, Reba, but we just got, to stop the violence in the south side of Chicago, we just started a National Football Association team. They just got inducted into the National Football Association. It is called the Southside Raging Bulls. And it's for 18 to 40-year-olds.
Wow. So,
That's happened this year.
Okay, so now, maybe you mentioned it previously. We just had Mr. 7000 at the Chicago South Super Bowl as well. So sports is certainly something that an area where we can re-engage these young people too, besides creative arts. And so I'm excited to hear about that. Raging Bulls. Okay. So
Raging Bulls.
For something on Facebook to connect with you as well, Chris?
Yeah, if you look on Facebook, I actually put out the post about that football team and stuff when they got inducted. But definitely they will be playing the 2023 season. And, you know, that's just one of the things that's got started up there. Here's something else that we have. We've got the Great Lakes Naval Base, and a man named Kevin Coachman. He is spearheading a workforce training program in the Waukegan area to bring 100 people at a time. We found a building. It's a 15,000 square foot building. We were going to use half of it for the workforce training and the other half for housing.
Awesome.
And we want to build independent units. We do have the mayor of North Chicago that is supporting this. And Goodwill Services have agreed to give an initiative of $700, you know, to help keep us funded for each person that we're able to work through the training program. But they're going to place them, they're going to give them jobs. They're wanting us to create thousands of jobs at the Great Lakes Naval Base.
Wow.
And this is a way to get that started as well. Now, in Harvey, Illinois, there is an entire city of abandoned buildings. There's a Jewel grocery store. There's not even a grocery store or a drugstore in that city. 75,000 people live in that city. So we want to bridge those gaps that are in that city. And all the other cities.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
But yeah, Walgreens left. So the elderly have to get their food or get their drugs from another city. So no medication. I want to do a veterans program to where they come in and deliver what these people need, because they don't need to be having to drive to another city to go to the store. And also people need a purpose. So people know how to work as a unit and do things. Well, I want to utilize what they've been taught so that they can teach others how to work as a unit. And that comes down to even, you know, the young people that's on the street happen to live by a pistol grip. I want to give them a new pistol grip.
Okay.
And that was, you know.
Yeah.
I want to give one that saves lives instead of take them.
Right. Awesome. It's this is a true case of many visions coming into fruition. I really appreciate your energy and the different areas and the movements that you're making. So I'm excited to be connecting with you, and I look forward to higher heights and deeper depths and what God is allowing us to be vessels.
That's right.
To do. So,
that's right.
Yeah, exciting.
You know, I don't know if you know this, but all the electric and gas bills in Chicago, 20% of that could go toward this project next month if everybody would put their account number in a website. So there's a way that every person...
Okay.
Yeah, every person, businesses or residents, 20% of your electric and gas in the state of Illinois goes toward this project. And all you have to do is put an account number in a website. It will not ask for a credit card. It won't want you to make a payment until you have to make your payment. But you make it, and they'll make a payment to us so we can afford to do this. So, yeah, with you being up there in Chicago, I need people to know what they have. So,
okay, yeah. So is this a part of the solar initiative?
Not a bit.
Is that connected? Okay, wow.
No, it's Ameren, Silco, Nicor, whoever's your power company, whoever's your gas supplier. You put your account number in this website, and 20% next month when you pay the bill will go toward this project. And that's not just the state of Illinois. We have 17 states total, and we have 26 countries.
Okay. Wow.
But
it
is Illinois. And here, I'll give you my phone number, because you call me or text me, I'll send you the link so you can look at it. You just put your zip code in there, and you're going to find out.
Okay.
That
all right.
All right. So it's 309-542-6319.
Okay. 309-542-6319. Okay. So, Chris, what is your last name? Or?
Collins. C-O-L-L-I-N-S.
Okay, Collins. Right. Okay. Thank you so much. So I will share. And, Brother L.A., I think we briefly spoke with on one of the podcasts with Brother Siron, so that would be a great network to connect with the state for this additional funding, 20%. So Brother Siron Smith is the National Black Hub University. So National Black Hub University, which I am a donating member, we have the block-by-block concept where neighbors actually know each other and actually have concern and are engaged in meeting the needs as much as a neighbor can.
Could you repeat that? Could you repeat that? Because I didn't hear it.
Okay.
Part of what you said, because it blanked out.
Okay, sorry. So the National Black Club University, Brother Cyron Smith is the visionary behind National Black Club University, has connections and sister states across the nation. And the National Black Club University, the concept is back to the old school neighborly concept where neighbors are engaged and involved and they know what's going on their blocks. The children have gone and raked leaves and things like that. We do have proceeds from the $1 a month, it's $12 for the year, which is what we have asked the support of. It helps the young people to get a stipend when they do tasks. We do encourage young people to start their own businesses, and many of us are teachers, professionals, doctors, so there's a whole network of different professionals in various areas. So Brother Cyron Smith, who is also a Navy veteran, has created this concept. And one group in Chicago, Teamwork Inglewood, they have taken the concept and actually they've mastered a good portion of the concept. And so they've been able to build with that. So, yeah, I will certainly share and post on my website as well, if that's okay to share. I was looking on Facebook, Chris, and I saw several posts. I just want to see if I'm at the right place. Okay, so Raging Bull, several things popped up. I just don't know which one. What is your icon, your profile photo, or would I look your name up?
Look my name up. It should have my face on it.
Chris.
And then you'll be on, should be on my page.
Okay.
And then just look at the post that I shared, and it would have been within the past month.
Okay.
There you go. Thank you. Sorry, buddy.
Now, ironically, my 22-year-old just walked in, and he actually has some trade skills. He's a certified cement mason. We got some training from Job Corps, so CJ will be helping with some of the labor with some of our projects.
You know, I'm actually a partner of Job Corps.
Awesome.
So, okay. You know, I've been working with Job Corps and like those habitat camps and stuff like that with disasters since 2005. And, you know, I watched thousands of people come through the Job Corps camp and in Pearlington, Mississippi. And every Monday I had brand new people to show what to do for the week to help those people.
Okay.
But it was amazing to watch the kids. And
okay.
Just, you know, it was great. So what was really cool was I got to be on a phone call about a month and a half ago with a lady that I'm telling a story about Katrina, and she finishes the story. And she says, are you talking about Pearlington, Mississippi? And I said, yeah. And she said, I met you. And I said, yeah, I think you did more than meet me. I said, I think we ate together. I said, because it would have been at that habitat camp. And she said, it was. But I planted a seed in her then, but she came back with roots, branches, and bearing fruit with a 50-story building in Houston wanting to do 1,000-plus units of transitional housing to start turning people's lives around. But here she would come back, you know, and it was all through someone else that brought her back, but it was the point that we had already met. And she knows how long I've been doing this. But she's been on her mission ever since. So never underestimate the power of planting a seed.
Yeah. Okay, now your picture, so I see somebody sitting. It says Chris Collins is our blessed love.
No. Text me. I'll send you the link right now.
Okay. Thank you. Wow. TC Thor. So I can't wait for the young people to meet you. Brother L.A., your name rings all across Chicago and my circle. So I will say the streaming, we got to get that streaming because that's how we want to participate. That together, because someone asked me if we still have streaming, or even the guy who works, he's a technician for Yamaha. He has his own business and he does sound and lighting and stage setup for the company.
Well, I see we want to get some momentum going into 2023, even this month. So, I'm glad you gave us the date for February.
Yeah, February 3rd, 2023. It's going to be an all-day event with an after party. Basically, start early evening, 6 o'clock. But we'll be out in the community.
Because I've guessed it snows up there already, isn't it?
We have some flurries. We haven't had much snow, but yeah, we've had some flurries,
Nothing that really stuck, okay.
Not, maybe once or twice. just not very much.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Chicago's got a lot of activity up there this time of year.
Yeah.
But Chicago has activity all the time now.
Yeah, it's just I'm used to helping other people. I'm a great assistant, but spearheading an event, it's a big deal. It's a lot. So
I know there's a homeless population up in that neck of the woods. What are people doing up there about that? To your knowledge. I know they have men's shelters up there. I know they have women's shelters up there. I know they have family shelters up there. But are they doing anything else just besides? And then everybody can't get inside those shelters. What else, to your knowledge, are any churches up there doing anything? And I'm sure they might have some church with a homeless ministry, but I'm not sure, but I'm sure they have something up there.
There are a few of the larger churches. I really just see them building nice churches, a lot of them, but Bright Star has connections to Bright Star Missionary Baptist Church. They have connections to housing and transitional housing. The reentry is a big part of getting previously incarcerated.
That's a big market.
Yeah, so they have housing set up. Many entities have housing set up for reentry, returning citizens. And, so the women's shelters, they're certainly more women's shelters. Matthew House, I refer people. I'm really just looking at seeing administratively. Here I am again, just trying to come up with a way to connect individuals. Even for myself, I had a situation where my landlord was being super unfair. She was a little anxious. I think someone may have reported the building when she was having people to look at it. So she wanted to get shut down fast. But Matthew House, they have housing referrals. And so I refer a lot of people to them. I've seen where people, they get into, I won't say low-income housing. Like I said, even for myself, I thought I would be able to get into a place. But, yeah, by then I was able to just find my home. So there, a lot of landlords that I work with are renting rooms. They get their peers that want to become roommates, so they're renting rooms.
Now, Rima, how much are some of those rooms going for?
The average is $450, $500, between $450 and $500. I thought it was pretty much on the high end for $500, but I would still say, because we have employment resources, and Choice Acts is one of our community partners, Choice Acts, which is a reentry employment service for those reentering society. And so there's no excuse. I mean, if it's $500, you know, and they give stipends, not stipends. Well, one program is giving stipends because they have a forklift program. They get bus cards, continental breakfast, and then there's another program where they give stipends. So I'm really just trying to stay abreast of organizations that help people actually with income instead of either no cost or just low income housing, because we want to encourage self-sustainability. That's actually, you know, where my heart is, self-sustainability.
Right. Well, $500, in my opinion, you can take that money, because in 4 months, you're going to spend over about $2,000, so... My whole thing is take that money and go to Home Depot, Lowe's, and Menards and start buying building materials. Or Chris, what can they get for $500 from your your organization?
Well,
or $2,000. Let's say $2,000.
I was going to say, you know, right now the way the price of materials is, it's just nuts. You know, 2x4s are $10, and you're in the city, they're probably more. That's a wooden 2x4. I can build a frame and give you the trusses and the walls to be able to sit on a concrete slab for $20 a square foot. So if you need a 100 square foot house, the whole entire shell of that home will be delivered for $2,000.
See, I think if we do a live stream build, the rest will take care of itself. Do a live stream build, and actually we need to do several of them. And that event in February, like I say, we got plenty of time left in this month. I like to do something this month as well. Maybe not. Any way we can get it. I'll put it that way. Speaking of which,
I think Carlos is
back on the road. I think he's in transit right now.
Yeah, he just texted me just a second ago.
Okay. Because I'm looking at Christmas is just a day. It's just one day.
That's right. New Year's is one day.
Yes, one day.
But let's have a resolution, though. Let's put a solution and clean some problems. You know, when they, if you have a wound, they take a solution and it's saline. But, you know, that's the salt of the earth, right? What heals us. Without it, we can't live. So, you know, we need to put a solution on the wound here. We need to clean it out, and then we need to put some stitches in it and put some antibiotics, not antibiotics, some probiotics in the wound and make sure this infection never comes back. You know, there is a solution, and I think we're all part of it.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree. I'm up here pet sitting. I'm pet sitting a two dogs and a pig. But the dog won't let me get to the bowls to put food in so I can feed everybody. Anyway,
you know,
his master will be back
also
soon.
Reba, we have we have a greenhouse, and I don't know if Carlos is listening right at the moment. I know he's just moving, but this greenhouse grows fish, vegetables, and mushrooms, and it's patented, and we're here to show people that they can actually make a living, make money, but go from having nothing to having a retirement. There's
now,
so many options.
Reba,
excuse me,
Reba, how much on a monthly basis do you spend on vegetables?
Well, I frequent the produce mobile, and I generally have more than I could really prepared to consume. So I spend vegetables very little. Frozen, maybe $10, to be honest, myself.
Did you say Produce Mobile?
Yeah, so the church has a Produce Mobile.
I think I got a visual. So are these people that bring produce to wherever you live at?
They bring it to the church. Yeah, they bring it to our area, and we pick it up, and we pretty much are able to. So there are several food pantries that are connected to the Greater Chicago Food Depository. They also have a produce mobile that comes out.
Got me thinking.
Yeah.
We have Carlos, I believe, Carlos Villamars, 703. Carlos, if you're there, your mic is open.
Hey, can you guys hear me?
Are you still in transit?
No. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you. We can hear you clear.
No, I'm back now. We just got done driving really long way, so I'm still kind of super tired.
I understand. Yeah, that you spent about 15 to 18 hours to get there one way?
Yeah, I think it's 1,000 miles one way. On the way down, we did it in 2 days. This time, we made it back nonstop, but it was rough.
You need to rest.
Yeah, we had to pack up all the art and bring it back and everything. It was a lot of work. But, yeah, it was an incredible festival. Saw lots and lots of art. What's really interesting, I was able to speak to some of the artists at Art Basel, and every artist that I had spoken to is very interested in helping us with the program we came up with, where a portion of art sales that they make go towards the Hope for Dream Habitat project. And, of course, the portion that they contribute is going to be tax deductible. So the response was overwhelming, and I believe it's because many artists and DJs, et cetera, have experienced homelessness, so they can understand the problem very well. So I'm going to work with Chris, or if we can find somebody that does copywriting or, you know, sort of like press release development, whatever you want to call it, to be able to send a package to all these artists at Art Basel and see if they would like to, you know, sign up and contribute towards this. I also met a barber. It's kind of interesting. We're at this corner called Esquina de la Abuela. This is in Alapata, Florida. It's one of the, you know, it's like a barrio. You know, it's not the really super trendy part of Miami. And our exhibit was called the Fridge Art Festival, and it was on the corner called Esquina de la Abuela, which means the grandmother's corner. And the story is just really incredible. This lady had fought in a revolution, the grandmother, and then had moved to Miami and purchased a little corner lot. And then she bought all the houses around that corner. So now she has a whole sort of block that's kind of an arts collective compound. You know, there's all sorts of arts. They have pop-up art festivals in there. The relative, Fabian, is working to try to keep the property, but he's getting lots of pressure from real estate developers to convert it into, you know, it's very valuable as a piece of property, so they're trying to drive him out of there. So that was part of the reason we were down there is this Fridge Art Festival. Part of the donations went to the, you know, to save this corner, grandmother's corner. So this is something that is very interesting. And, you know, since I was there, I decided to try to help and see to bring some attention to the fact that they want to wipe out this really historic corner in Miami. So, yeah, that's where the festival was held.
Was the festival part of a larger festival? Because a friend of mine went to.
Yeah.
It was part of a. Okay,
yeah,
I think because where I think he told me
Miami
a banana.
Art Week.
Okay.
Miami Art
yeah,
Week.
He told me
is,
someplace somebody sold a banana duct tape to a canvas or whatever, so for like over $100,000.
Yeah, I mean, there was, you know, there's Miami Art Week, which is a week-long art festival, but Art Basel is the premiere of the Miami Art Week. And there's Art Basel, how do I put it, there's like side things to do during Miami Art Week related to Art Basel, and then, of course, there's Art Basel. My understanding is to get like, you know, to hang your paintings at, quote, the real Art Basel, like the convention center or whatever. It's super, super expensive. So there's a lot of side festivals where it's not as expensive to, you know, hang up your art. And this is the one that we went to, was one of the side festivals. But, of course, you had people from the other festivals coming, but just not the same traffic, you know, that you would get at the convention center. But my understanding is you have to pay, like, tens of thousands, you know, to show your art in some of these other places, which, of course, we didn't have. But yeah, it was pretty incredible. I met some incredible rap artists. There's a couple of rap artists that I met that are interested in helping. One of them is Malik. And he's a, you know, the thing is I wasn't into hip hop. So, you know, I'm going up to rap artists and going, what's your name? And I guess they're surprised they didn't know who they were, but a couple of the rap artists that I did meet in person, Malik, and then another rap artist, Hakim, are very also very interested in trying to help. So I think that's another area of potential funding. One of the artists, Hakim, came up to me after I gave a presentation. I actually did some rapping, believe it or not. I got up on stage and did a little rapping and talked about the problem. And afterwards, one of the artists came up to me and said, you know, we're building this gigantic city in I think it's in Dubai, the Naom project. I think it's N-A-O-M or something like that. And he's directly connected with that and wants me to contact him to try to bring our technology to that project, which is huge. You know, they're trying to build a gigantic eco-city. So, you know, the trip was definitely worth it. The tiny home didn't make it. You know, it was one of these things, you know, you learn in the military, adapt and overcome, you know, be prepared for things not to go the way they're supposed to go, but they always go the way they're supposed to go because you make it there, you know, and everything that happens is what allows you to be there. That's the way I look at everything. You know, everything that happened, good or bad, allowed me to make it there, you know, so I try not to get too upset about things, you know, not working out properly or whatever, but I think it was a huge success, at least from my point of view, to get down there and make awareness for it and just see exactly how many artists and DJs and, you know, celebrities could probably jump onto this project and really help this, you know, really help launch this.
About any number, body count, how many people are attended to at least your event? I mean, the fridge.
We probably had a good, I don't know, maybe 1,000 or so. It wasn't, in some nights, like the night that the hip-hop artist came, it was really well attended. We probably got a couple hundred people that night. But, you know, it's an art festival that's, you know, off the beaten path, if you know what I mean. It's in one of the local neighborhoods. And, you know, they just don't get as well attended, you know, as the super big art, trendy ones, you know, where they have, you know, the super expensive art. But, you know, you got to do what you can do, and that's what we did.
Right. Well, 1,000 people is a – that's a good amount of people. I mean, that's a town. There are a lot of places around this country that don't even have a population of 1,000 people in their town. So, but in those places, I think you can gain more traction. And then, you know, you have a collection of small towns or small communities. And before you know it, you'll have large numbers. At least that's how I look at it.
Well, you know, I met some incredible people, and you know, that's what I'm about. I love meeting people, and it's easy for me to tell the story because, you know, I was homeless for a little while, so I know what it's like to be homeless. So it's easy for me. What's really interesting, you know, people say you're always connected. You meet people for a reason. I just, throughout the whole time, I just kept meeting really super interesting people. And things kept manifesting, you know. I needed a haircut, you know, and I was sitting at the festival, and I'm sitting there going, you know, I really need a haircut. And I look to my right, and there's a barber setting up a display, a local barber. He's a Marine, ex-Marine. Well, I guess you're always a Marine, but he was a Marine, retired, and a barber. And literally, he was setting up right across from where I was sitting, right as I was sitting there thinking, you know, I really, really need to get a haircut. So I got my haircut at the festival. And when I started talking to him, he wants to contribute. He's a small business, and, I, you know, he's a vet. And I have to call him because he wants to sign up with the same deal, you know, where a portion of his earnings will go towards helping the project. And, of course, it is a tax write-off, you know, so a lot of people were looking at it, I guess, from that point of view. So I think it's something we need to look at, you know, from a marketing point of view, trying to find as many people like that want to support such a great cause of getting people off the street, you know, and giving them a place to live, you know, giving them a place to have food, giving them a skill in growing food. And, of course, there was a lady on that was saying that she grows so much food. It is true, you know, a small space grows a lot of food. So eventually after they're feeding themselves, you know, the excess food could be used to feed others or it could be used to create a little, you know, farmer's market or to sell it to local restaurants and things like that. So I think it's a very interesting model for solving homelessness.
Yeah, because they have a homeless problem in Miami, if I'm correct, right?
Huge, huge. The states that are super interested, of course, are Miami, you know, Florida, California. Pretty much any place that's warm has, you know, a higher homeless problem than cold places. So, yeah, Florida has a huge problem, as well as California and other states. So that's where we need to do our work. Well, we need to do our work everywhere.
The people that, I know they had some people living under a bridge some years ago in Miami. I don't know if they've moved them out or whatever. I guess with your solution, because just a theory, I think a lot of homeless people that are in the city are there because they're close to, well, you know what I'm looking at? They might be homeless or living under a bridge, whatever situation, in Miami or Los Angeles or wherever. But they're looking for the, I guess, in a city like Miami, any kind of service that they want is in the city. Because if they go outside the city, those services might not be there, or they don't have any way to get, you know, get to those places. So how could any suggestions on how to pull people who are psychologically married to the city on how they should,
you know,
at least take, yeah, how to get them out of the city into an environment where they won't be homeless anymore?
You know, that's a good question. But, you know, the problem is that they are already living in the city. So it seems to me that, you know, that there should be land available in the city or, you know, I think anybody can agree that they don't want, at least, you know, people that aren't even homeless, they don't want to see homeless people under bridges, you know, in Washington, D.C. You know, it's the same problem here in D.C. We have places where people are camping under freeway bridges and things like that. You know, there's an associated cost with that, and we need to look at how we can find land. You know, there's community gardens, there's you know, abandoned lots, you know, there's all sorts of potential solutions that could help. Maybe refurbishing some older homes into places like this that could house homeless, but you know, it's going to take action from people that have older properties, governments, you know. But I think we can all agree we don't want people having to live under bridges. We don't want people having to sleep over heating grates. And many of these people are vets, you know, and you know, they served our country, and now here they are, sort of thrown away. So, you know, I don't have all the solutions. You know, I have some solutions.
Right.
It's something we all need to get
to. Some is better than none. This article here I'm reading, it says Miami ranks second worst in the nation for income and poverty level, according to the Census Bureau. For many Miamians, today is payday for one of those blessed Friday mornings. I'll hold it, see. Of the top 25 metro areas, Miami, Florida has the second lowest median household income in the United States. According to the Census Bureau, the latest American Community Survey, the median household earned only income in Miami would be $51,362 per year, putting the Magic City, I guess that's what they call Miami, just ahead of $247 ahead of Tampa, Florida, and the metro area, the second lowest median income. Rounding out the bottom three is another Florida city, Orlando, where the household median income is only $52,385. Even accounting for the fact that Florida has no state income tax, those figures almost half of what the median income like San Francisco, $97,667, in Washington, D.C., $95,843 taken each year. The survey also makes clear that it's just not the tech bros in Silicon Valley or the government lobbyists in the nation's capital who are paid handsomely. Workers in cities like Minneapolis and Denver also make $20,000 more than people in Miami. Let me, you know, it's interesting that they put these figures out here. I have a friend of mine. I got to track her down. She lives in Asheville, North Carolina. And she used to work in Gaithersburg, Maryland for about 3 months out of the year. That's it. She's retired now. She used to work 3 months out of the year. And she lived on, let me put the figure at $12,000. She earned, in 90 days, she earned $12,000. Now, half of that, now 10% of that, she gave it away. But half of that 12, which is $6,000, she would bank that savings. And she lived off the rest. Now, how did she do it? Now, once again, her home was in Asheville, North Carolina, or is, last time I spoke to her. Asheville, North Carolina. What she did was, now this is about to be extreme for most people that are listening. And I met her in Washington, D.C. at an event called the Solar Decathlon, which is, you know, they have these extreme homes that are, they're solar homes. They're off the grid, you know. Which university students put these houses together. But these houses operate like any normal house would, heating, air conditioning, cooking, the whole nine yards, but zero utility bills. And each one of these homes would be classified probably as a tiny house for the most part. So in any event, she was just a tourist, and I was volunteering. It was my first year of doing volunteer work there, and I met her, and now this is how she does it. She raised two kids. The kids were, you know, adults, but let's start with her home, her house. She bought a trailer. She bought cargo container home before cargo container homes became fashionable. She was ahead of the curve. So she bought one of those for like maybe $2,000. I think they cost two or three, whatever they cost now, but at least no more than $2,000. And she lives in a eco-village. And if you look up eco-village magazines, there's a bunch of eco-villages all around the globe. But she lives in an eco-village, so she lives in a community with other like-minded people. They grow a substantial part of their food right within her eco-village. So she's not going to starve. She's got a debt-free house. She never had a mortgage. Other people, because in eco-villages, they rely the currency, or one of the primary currencies in an eco-village, is social capital. Just like the Amish and the Mennonite, they get together and they help each other build their homes. Therefore, no 30-year mortgages, no mortgages at all. So that's how the roof over her head is. That's taken care of. Now, although I met her at an event that promotes solar energy with solar electric, solar panels, and all this other stuff, her herself is not into solar. She's into candles. So to light up her home at night, she's got candles, and, you know, her house is not going to burn down or anything. But so that's how she does that. For transportation, once again, she got social capital. And she told me that social capital or the relationships that you have with other people, that's the real Social Security. And when you got enough social capital, you don't need social services. So she's got enough social capital anywhere she goes, in the United States at least, where if she needs a car, she's got, this is way before Uber and Lyft, but with social capital, she doesn't have to pay, as long as she puts gas in the tank, that's it. And she, if she runs errands, she'll run errands for other people in her social network, and that just builds up her social capital even more. Now, let's get to her, the job, because she worked in Gaithersburg, Maryland, which is a suburb of Washington, D.C., for $12,000 a year. She's retired now. Yeah. But she slept at her job. What she did was when everybody left and went home for the night, you know, she had her little, she would go to the ladies' room, and, you know, nobody else would come into the building overnight. And that was her, instead of paying for or renting a room or renting an apartment or a studio or a house, or Airbnb didn't exist back when she was doing this. But that's what she did. So that's how she was able to live off of $12,000 a year. And actually, look, make it, because once again, out of the $12,000, 10% of that, that's $1,200, that goes to charity right off the top. All right. Then she would take another six and bank it. So she was living off about like $4,000 a year, something like that. So when I hear these figures that I was just reading off, you know, $95,000, $50,000 or whatever. And I'm saying all this to say this. Learning how to live sustainably, it's, I would call it art and science. I've got a contact in Uganda. She's a single parent. She has a son, small, well, young, 4 or 5 years old. She lives off of $75 a month. I've got people that live in Southeast Asia that live off $100, maybe $150 a month. Now, if you look at them with their clothes, and you would think they're just a regular westernized person by their clothes, but well, even if you go visit where they live at, so it's a whole, you know what, study people. I'm not talking about, you know, the poster card people, but if, matter of fact, even better, if you get a chance, go to some of these developing countries, and you'll be amazed at how some of these people live. A big, now, can you do this in the United States? The example I just gave, the lady's name, my friend, the Red Moon Song. I don't know her real name, but that's the name she goes by. The lady that lives off of less than, she lives on about $4,000 a year out of her $12,000 a year income. And like I said, there are a lot of people, if you know where to go in the United States, okay, once again, and I put this stat out there all the time, only 3% of the landmass in the United States, 86% of the population of the United States only occupies 3%. 95% of the United States is rural. If you start exploring some of these rural areas, in some of these rural areas where you can live very sustainably, on the cheap, it might be only a 15, 20, or 30-minute drive from what I call civilization, where you got the Walmart, you got the bowling alleys, the movie theaters, the downtowns and all that. I mentioned some of the places I've been to that are just like that. You know, 15, 20-minute drive from a town that's got basically everything, not basically, that has everything you can even imagine. So they're places like that all over the United States. So it you would be amazed at what people can live on. Like, say, this lady lives on, she receives $12,000. She only works 3 months out of, only when she was working. She's retired now. But it's an education. I'll put it that way. But it's an easy education. But some people just have to give up, you know, the thought, because some people just not can't, they can't imagine living in a tiny house. But my answer to that is everybody on the planet lives tiny, and I'll tell you why. We can only take up so much space at a time. We can only be in one room at a time. Now, you can have a 10-room house, okay, fully furnished, but you're only lit. I mean, just think about it, people. Listen to, how many rooms do you live in, you yourself, in a 24-hour period of time? Now, you don't live in the bathroom. That doesn't count. You don't live in the kitchen. That doesn't count. I primarily live in one room. I got more rooms than that here, but where I'm at right now, it's 10 rooms here. But I live in primarily one. All right, so, you know, do I need central air conditioning or central heating? No. All that stuff runs up, you know, your expenses. All right. I'm 6'8". So I know I can be a happy camper if I lived in something 84 square feet, because I've actually been in something 84 square feet, a tiny house. It had plenty of headroom. I didn't need to duck. The shower was adequate, and it's just 84 square feet. And then if you look at other cultures around the world, you know, like if you go to some place like Japan, where they have the capsule hotels or capsule motels. So even the Queen of England, well, the King of England now, excuse me, the King of England, King Charles, Buckingham Palace has, I don't know, Jesus, probably at least 700 rooms. Matter of fact, let me look at that figure right now. But number of rooms, of course, if somebody knows the number, let me know. Number of rooms in Buckingham Palace. All right, here we go. Let's see. I want number of rooms, not list of rooms. All right, here, how many rooms in Buckingham? All right, Buckingham Palace has 775 rooms. King Charles probably lives in maybe four of those rooms on a regular basis. He's got the bedroom. He's got, let's say, a family room. He's got an office. That's three rooms. Now, they hold state functions there, but state functions don't happen every day. But let's go in the state room. So here's the King of England with 775 rooms at Buckingham Palace, and at best, he lives in four rooms. At best, because once again, state functions are not every day. His bedroom, his office, you know, he probably spends more time in those two places than anything else. Of course, now 775 rooms, Buckingham Palace is also an office building too. But I'm just saying. So, but the rest of us that might, you know, live in a regular house or whatever, how many, even if you have a family, How many rooms do you guys actually live in? Tiny houses, the whole concept of tiny houses is basically cutting 70% of the wasted space in your house. You just shrink it down to what you're actually going to live in. And once again, kitchens and bathrooms don't count. So on that note, Chris, any final word? Or before we go to Chris, Reba, any final promotions here to wrap it up for today?
Just want to remind everybody that we're going to have the Inner City Youth and Black East Metropolis Enterprises for Entrepreneurship event. It's the first annual educational conference for fine and performing arts. And it's the Grand Ballroom Chicago on February 3rd, 2023. So for information, you can call 262-733-4080. Again, 262-733-4080. Or email RebaTheTeacher@gmail.com. RebaTheTeacher@gmail.com. And post your events and comments at Reba La Maestra, RebaLaMaestra.com.
Okay, Chris. Chris, any final thoughts for today? If Chris is there. Okay.
I really learned a lot on this particular podcast.
Yeah. Well, Carlos, you still here? Oh, okay. Any final thoughts for today? Because I know you gotta. Man, I would shut everything down after you hang up in here and just veg out for a day or two.
I think I need to, man. It's been quite the trip. We have the Hope organization. We do have social media that I'll just call out. We have Dream Habitat on Twitter and on Instagram. We also have the Hope for Dream Habitat groups on Facebook. And, yeah, you know, I guess what's the best way for people to reach us? I guess probably Brother Chris isn't here. I know he's got his phone number. But I think the Dream Habitat website is another way you can reach us. It's dreamhabitat.eco, DREAMHABITAT, dreamhabitat.eco, and through that platform you'll be able to contact. We're going to have all our sponsors, you know, we're going to have links to Hope and everything in that website, but for now there's a way for people to contact us through that website as well. And we're trying to get our social media stuff going. As you know, that's a job in and of itself. So thank
all right.
you
all right well get yes I've driven that route there, straight up 95, that takes something out of you. So your health is your wealth, so get rested up for a day, maybe even two. And whatnot. So, all right, thanks for calling in. Good to hear your voice again. On that note, Chris is somewhere, but we'll catch Chris tomorrow. On that note, everyone have a good rest of the day.
All right, best of luck.